Welcome to the Cardiovascular Pulse, where we dive into medical breakthroughs, leading technology, and healthy lifestyles. Join us as we empower you on your journey to a healthier and stronger you.
Today, joining us is Dr. Philip Smith. He's an interventional cardiologist at the Cardiovascular Institute of the South, both in Baton Rouge and Zachary. Welcome, Dr. Smith.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So today we're going to talk about structural heart disease, as I know this is your specialty and what you are most interested in. So let's just dive right in. Tell me, what is structural heart disease?
So it's kind of complicated, but just to simplify things, you know, I kind of think of the heart as any kind of room that you have in the house. So like take your kitchen, for instance. So the kitchen has different functions and has different parts to it, right? And so we, as cardiologists, kind of break down the heart really into three main parts. You can have three types of problems, okay? You can have a plumbing problem, okay? You can have an electrical problem, or you can have a structural problem, okay? And so the types of problems that I deal with are both plumbing problems and structural problems. So problems with maybe the walls of the heart, okay? Or the doors and windows of the heart. And so with structural cardiology, we're dealing with the walls and the doors of the heart, okay? And so you can think of, you know, if you have a kitchen or a room in the house that has a given function. So in the kitchen, the function is to prepare meals for the rest of the house, right? Well, if you have doors that are not working well, people coming in and out at random times may not work efficiently, right? And so those are the types of problems that I deal with, the doors in the heart being the valves of the heart. And then there's other issues with the walls of the heart that that can go wrong. And so those are typically the types of problems that I deal with.
That is an interesting way to look at it. And honestly, the first time I've heard it described that way. So if there are windows and doors, as you will, that won't operate properly, how do we know?
So that's a really good question. So most of the time, if someone has a, when we say talking about windows and doors here, we're talking about specifically valves of the heart. If someone has severe valve problems, they will have symptoms to suggest that there's something going wrong. Now, no one's going to have a symptom and say, oh my gosh, you know, I think my valve is not working well. You'll have some non-specific kind of vague symptom that just hints that you may have a problem. So kind of the typical symptoms that we see with structural heart disease are chest pain or chest discomfort, shortness of breath. And so most of the time that's initially shortness of breath when someone's up and exerting themselves, you know, mowing the grass or something like that, or exercising. Just vague lightheadedness, feeling like you're going to pass out or actually pass out. Palpitations where you feel like your heart's racing, swelling, all of these things are symptoms that you may have vaguely, you know, broadly speaking, a heart problem that could end up being a structural heart problem. I'll tell you, a lot of times patients don't always have those typical symptoms because a couple of reasons. One is a lot of these valve problems come on so gradually over time that people don't really notice that there's been a significant change. So the valve problem occurs over months, okay? And so these symptoms come on so gradually that people will actually curtail their activity to where they don't themselves perceive that they are having symptoms. But if you talk to, say, the husband or wife, they'll tell you, oh yeah, she gives out. You know, 6 months ago, we were going to the grocery store and she was walking up and down the aisles and did okay with it, but now she just stays in the car. And so it can be kind of vague and tough to tease out. Just talking about it out loud just now, I'm thinking of a lady who has a severe valve problem. She's in her mid-70s and was, you know, totally normal driving, going to the grocery store, going to the pharmacy. And then she said about 6 months ago, she just started feeling old. She couldn't really describe it. She was just said, you know, I just felt 77. You know, up until then, I felt like I was 67. And then all of a sudden, I started feeling my age at 77. And she just thought it was because she was, you know, getting old and that she was overweight. But her primary care doctor listened to her heart and heard a heart murmur, which prompted additional testing, which led her to me.
Wow. So that's why it's so important. If someone doesn't feel right, if they have a gut feeling that something is off, to get checked and not just put it aside to old age or maybe just more activity than they're used to. That's why it's so important to come and see you.
Right, for sure. You know, and it doesn't necessarily, you know, if you're having these symptoms, happy to see you. You don't necessarily need to see a structural cardiologist, but you do need to see your primary care doctor. And hopefully he or she listens to your heart and listens for these things. Because a lot of times, you know, not only your symptoms, the first sign that you may have a structural heart problem, but just an abnormal heart sound can suggest that there's abnormal blood flow in the heart, which can suggest a valve problem. And so, primary care doctors are oftentimes the first ones who notice that something is amiss.
Are there any particular risk factors involved? Who is most at risk for valve disease in general?
You know, that's a really good question and very would be a complicated answer. I would say in general, most folks that are at risk of valve problems are older folks, folks that have been blessed with age. There are some less common valve problems that young folks can get. It varies pretty dramatically, but I would say, you know, probably 80% or more of the patients that I see that have legitimate severe valvular heart disease are folks that have been blessed with age.
If and when a patient comes in for any concerns in relation to this disease or just having these symptoms in general, what can they expect? Can you tell me a little bit about what types of testing might be performed to find valve disease?
Right. So for valve disease specifically, the first test that pretty much anyone is going to get is going to be an echocardiogram, which is an ultrasound of the heart where we look at using an ultrasound machine, which is totally non-invasive. Using an ultrasound machine, we look at the heart muscle itself to look at the different chambers of the heart, make sure they're the right size, make sure the heart's squeezing normally. And then we can also look at the valves themselves to see if they look normally. We can also look at the blood flow across the valves to make sure that blood is flowing normally. And that's usually the first sign that we see is an abnormal echocardiogram. If it's, you know, concerning, usually that will prompt additional testing, maybe a more specialized kind of echocardiogram or CT scan or some other things. I will say, you know, not only for the most part, a lot of people are not only going to get an echocardiogram up front, they're also going to get other tests looking for other reasons you may be having the shortness of breath, because it's not always obvious that it's a structural heart problem. Again, someone just comes in with shortness of breath, and they will get a variety of tests looking for not only structural heart disease, but other signs, you know, other heart problems such as blocked arteries in the heart that can also have the same symptoms. They can also have electrical problems that can also cause the same symptoms. So from a structural heart standpoint, everyone's going to get an echocardiogram, but for the most part, other people are going to get other testing, maybe a stress test, maybe a monitor, those sorts of things.
You certainly need the comprehensive testing to really get a clear picture Absolutely. Of what's going on in the heart.
Definitely.
So if someone does present with valve disease, what are the next steps? How do we treat this? Do we use medications, procedures? There's so many new innovations available. Yeah. Tell me a little about it.
So again, it depends on what valve is affected, because the heart, everybody has four valves in the heart. There's the aortic valve, the mitral valve, pulmonic, and tricuspid valve. And so it depends on which valve and what specific problem the valve has. Most valve problems, you're not going to be able to treat with medicines all that well, because it's a mechanical problem. And so medicines can only really get you so far. Now, one of the most common valve problems that we see is aortic valve problems. And so really, broadly speaking, you can have two types of aortic valve problems. You can either have an aortic valve that doesn't open well, and so that we call that stenosis, or it's leaking and you have blood that flows backwards inside the heart. We call that regurgitation. And so, again, medicines will only get you so far. If you have a severe form of one of those valve problems, usually folks get a valve replacement of some kind. These days, we have two methods to replace a valve. One would be an open heart surgery, which has been around for, you know, decades. But here in the last probably 10 years, 10 to 15 years, we have newer technologies, minimally invasive technologies, to replace the aortic valve. The procedure that I'm talking about is a procedure that I can do called a TAVR procedure, where we replace the valve by going through an artery in the leg through a puncture about the size of a number two pencil. And so the valve goes through that, goes through the artery in the leg up to the heart and replace the valve. Very attractive because, for one, it was, you know, traditionally thought to be a alternative to surgery, but now some of the newer data is coming out that shows that regardless of the patient population, whether you're, you know, very old and very frail, or if you're, you know, in your 60s and you need an aortic valve replacement, TAVR is non-inferior to a traditional open heart surgery. And so it's very attractive for that reason, because the recovery for the TAVR procedure is not nearly, it's not as significant as an open heart surgery. So usually for the TAVR procedure, it's a overnight stay. So you come in the morning, we do the procedure in the morning, you stay overnight, and if everything looks good, you go home the next day. And usually folks are back up to 100% within a week. If you compare this to the traditional open heart surgery, usually you have the surgery, and it can vary, but generally you're looking at 3 to 5 days in the hospital after the open heart surgery. And then it's weeks before you're back to, you know, your former self, what you were before you had the surgery. And so TAVR is very attractive from that standpoint, is because we can get really good results and the recovery time is much quicker.
Replacing the valve really can make all the difference, right? It's like a brand new heart, yeah. Almost. They can do exactly what they could do before.
Yeah. So a lot of people, it's so interesting and it varies, but some people can tell a difference immediately, like the next day, post-op day one, people can feel a difference. And then, you know, we see people back a week after the procedure and it's like night and day for a lot of people. I mean, it really is transformative for a lot of people.
So interesting to be able to improve that quality of life. Right. It must feel good to do that for your patients.
Oh, yeah. Very gratifying.
In addition to TAVR, are there any other procedures as it relates to structural heart disease that you specialize in and use to treat these complicated diseases?
So valvular heart disease is really bread and butter for what I do. There are other very niche procedures that we were able to offer that are not even really worth talking about because they're so rare and so few and far in between. But there are other procedures that are very common. The one that comes to mind is left atrial appendage occlusion, which this is for folks that have atrial fibrillation or AFib. So AFib is very, very common, gets more and more common with age. If you live to your 80s, there's about a 50% chance that you have AFib at some point. And so AFib, the reason we care about AFib for the most part is it dramatically increases your risk of stroke in the long term. And so most folks, in order to lower that risk of stroke, we have on blood thinners. Now, the problem with blood thinners, yes, they do lower your risk of stroke, but because it's a blood thinner, it also is going to increase your risk of having bleeding problems. And so it's not infrequent that for whatever reason, someone needs to be on a blood thinner, but they can't be on a blood thinner because of blood bleeding problems. And so one procedure that I'm able to offer is called the Watchman procedure, which is basically a procedure where we go through the femoral vein in the leg and go up to the heart and put a small device inside a small outpouching of the heart called the left atrial appendage. It's usually the patient's totally asleep for the procedure, so they go to sleep and wake up and it's done. And it's usually a same-day procedure or one overnight stay. So come in the morning, do the procedure in the morning, and if everything looks good in the evening, can go home after that. The reason the Watchman procedure is so attractive is because it lowers risk of stroke in folks that have AFib, but you don't have to be on blood thinners. So initially, for a few months, you'll have to be on blood thinners, but after that short period of time, assuming the Watchman is properly placed, you can come off blood thinners and have that low risk of stroke without having to be on the blood thinners to begin with. And so it's very attractive because it's almost like having your cake and eating it too, right? You're lowering the risk of stroke, but you don't have that bleeding risk. And so patients love it because it's a one-time thing. They have this one procedure and then they can put the blood thinners behind them, you know, for the rest of their life. And so, again, minimally invasive, really, really amazing technology. And so people really enjoy, they don't enjoy, but they appreciate that ability to not have to live, you know, chained to your blood thinner for the rest of your life.
Wow. Another life-changing, innovative procedure offered by CIS and our physicians here. Right. Thank you, Dr. Smith, for helping us learn a little more about structural heart disease today. It was great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
We hope that this has empowered you on your health journey. If you have health concerns, visit cardio.com to learn more or request an appointment. Make sure to follow this podcast as well as CIS on social media for updates. Thanks for listening.